They're calling this the age of Obama, and what it means to be black has become a much more complex question. Whether or not you can ask that question has also become a complex answer. Teray joins us now. He has a new book out that's called Who's Afraid of Post-Blackness? Teray's an author and correspondent for MSNBC, among many other things. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio
today. Thanks for having me.
So it's clear from your writing, which is very impassioned in this book, that this is something that's been bothering you for a long time, this question of who you're friends with, what kind of music you listen to, and how that reflects on whether you're black enough.
Yeah, and how you walk and how you speak
and how you dress
and who you date and who you marry. And it's never really even about what you think. It's about the sound quality of your voice a lot of the time. And a lot of people have written about this. It started for me in college when I was living in the black house where only three people lived. You had to fight to get in there. I lived there, African-American studies major, dating a black med student, and also had founded and was running the only black newspaper on campus called The Fire This Time. And still, this guy said to me, "Shut up, Torre, you ain't black." I was like, wow, like, why do we think that? What does that mean? Why do we do that to each other? And just started thinking over the years about how it's not a religion that you can be thrown out of. You know, it's a community that you cannot escape, and it's a thing that you have the right to shape yourself. Skip Gates talks about there's 40 million black people, there's 40 million ways to be black. You have the right and the ability to choose how you want to do blackness. And it's portable. It doesn't have to go to jail to maintain its you know, being fresh. You know, it can go to yoga, it can go to the ballet, it can go skydiving. I mean, that's a key incident I wrote about.
Yeah, you're talking about people criticizing you that black people don't go skydiving.
Yeah, I mean, I was on my way to go skydiving, and these three brothers told me black people don't do that. And I did it anyway, and I had the most spiritual experience of my life. I mean, when the parachute opened, and I'm looking out over the world, and I'm like, I am a speck in this whole world, and there must be a God running this, because I, and like all the other people, are just so tiny. And if I had not done that, because black people don't do that, I would have missed out on a chance to get closer to God, which is an amazing thing that no person would deny me. So that's what I'm saying, that there's a huge buffet in life, and let's just take advantage of all of it and not say, well, black people don't do that, and you're not black because you do that.
Well, let me kind of test the limits, because you talk about post-blackness being limitless, that the African-American community has no limits. It should expand beyond them.
Well, that black identity is right. Limitless, and you can do anything. You don't lose it because you go to the opera or something
right.
Like that.
Well, let's test the limits of that, Teray. Here, the book is called Who's Afraid of Post-Blackness? What about, for example, somebody who campaigned, a black man who decided he was going to be ultra-conservative and campaign against affirmative action in
right.
A number of states?
I mean, you know, that those individuals exist. I think that is I completely disagree with that intellectually, right? That's not what I believe in. That's not what I want to see us do. But that is a legitimate black choice. You don't lose your blackness because you're a conservative, because you're against affirmative action. Like, you're still black.
What if, for example, you know, my grandfather was a composer. He was a classical composer born in 1895 and has been called an Uncle Tom because he wrote classical music. What about that?
Well, you know, so black people can't write classical music? I mean, like,
well, that's actually been legitimately argued that it's not that especially at that time that he was turning away from his own culture.
Well, I'd say this, that he's certainly not turning away from his own culture. He's turning into something that he is interested in. And if he's interested in it, then it is his personal culture. Now, I'd also say that the Uncle Tom threat or pejorative that we've had for hundreds of years now, being an Uncle Tom is a black response, an unfortunate response, but a black response to being under white supremacy. So most people are choosing to do, say, the Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman thing. Some of them are choosing to do the Uncle Tom thing. It's still a black response to white supremacy. It's not going with the community and the group, but that's a black person's response to white supremacy.
All right, but it's to a certain extent, and again, we're speaking to Torre, who's the author of the new book, Who's Afraid of Post-Blackness, which is absolutely readable. In fact, in many ways, you can't put it down. But to a certain extent, doesn't the black community and lose its power when they become less unified, when they're so diverse.
Well,
and
there is no unity. There never has been unity. Perhaps in the recent past of the halcyon 60s, it felt like there was more unity because there was a clearer enemy and there was a clearer goal that we don't have basic human and civil rights, so we have to work together toward those things. Now the enemies are less clear. There are more human and civil rights to be enjoyed. There's more opportunity for black people to get ahead educationally, professionally. And that sense of unity does not exist. And a lot of times when unity is being discussed, it's being used as a tool of social control. You are not doing blackness the way that I think it should be done. So you are not being unity or whatever.
Okay, but how protective do African Americans then have to be about their own institutions? I mean, for example, it was questioned when I joined with a black grandparent, joined the black student union at my college. Do we have to be protective of institutions and say, wait a second, this is actually for African Americans?
Well, yes, I think that is a little different of a point, but I think that we're not going to ever get further without white people in the struggle, right? So if a white person is well-intentioned and wants to join the NAACP, and we've had biracial people running the NAACP currently and historically, but if you want to join that and you're well-intentioned and you want to work toward justice and unity and then a nation being better and black people being stronger, then why not?
All right. So you're saying anything, any question of this is not black needs to be thrown out.
I don't think the question is relevant or valuable. I mean, like, let's take the Clarence Thomas example, which is the key example. Most black people want to throw him out of the community in their mind. They don't know that this is an individual who comes from extremely low working class circumstances where things are not that much different than they were when they were enslaved there. So that's often the beginning. Where do you come from? You come from the middle class. Oh, you're Grant Hill. You're not black. Okay, well, Clarence Thomas comes from extremely low working class background. Clarence Thomas goes to Yale wearing coveralls because he wants his professors to know, I'm not changing for you guys. I'm black. I come from South Carolina. I don't care what you think. And this is a man who knows Malcolm X's speeches and writing backwards and forwards. He takes Malcolm X's life and thoughts very seriously, far more seriously than most black people who'd say, well, I'm blacker than Clarence Thomas. So now you get into it with Clarence Thomas about Malcolm X, and he will school you. Now, really? Because he has a very unfortunate record on the Supreme Court because he married a white woman, these sort of things? No, I can't throw him out of the community for these sort of felonies.
Well, it is a great discussion and a great book. Touré is author of Who's Afraid of Post-Blackness, correspondent for MSNBC. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We definitely want to get your views. Give us a call at 8778-MY-TAKE. Post your comment at thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee. John Hockenberry is out today, but he will return later this week. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, WKKF.org. The Takeaway is produced by WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.